Hi, everyone. Welcome to Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. I'm Langdon DeMint.
And I'm Julian Taylor.
And welcome to our podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Two Bald Guys and a Slightly Less Bald Girl Talking Safety. So my name's Julian Taylor. Pleased to be joined by my shiny-headed American colleague, Langdon DeMint. How are you, Langdon?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, we're enjoying good weather in the UK. I've just had a trip to Australia where it rained and it was 10 degrees, and I've come back to the UK to hot weather, which feels really counterintuitive to me. And I understand it's quite steamy where you are.
It is. It's very steamy. It is. We have hit that time of the year where you take a shower and you walk outside and you've taken another shower, which it's always... lovely.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Lovely. Perfect golf weather.
Perfect golfing weather. That's the key thing, isn't it? So, yeah. And can you believe I got home from Australia. I got home at 2:45 and I was on the first tee by 3:00.
That's exactly where I was going with my comment as well. Well done.
And it was my jet lag strategy. I thought, actually, if I'm stood upright and I'm outside, I can't fall asleep. Whereas if I go home and sit down, I'm going to fall asleep. And there was no family at home. Everybody is elsewhere in the UK at the moment for various reasons. So I thought, right, I have no reason to sit down and fall asleep. So, yeah.
Very nice. I'm jealous. Well, I did get to play Saturday, so I can't say too much. But good.
We should stop rambling about golf and actually introduce Karen Hewitt. Karen, second time on the podcast. It's great to have you back. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I'm just thinking it is the kind of weather where it would be better to have no hair.
It's a great thing. You can just mop it down. Yeah.
There is a lot of trouble with that, though, because your head burns easier. And the sweat has nowhere to go. It just comes straight into your eyes. Yeah. So there's good and bad, right?
Wow. We could have a whole health and safety conversation about appropriate hairstyles, couldn't we?
Yeah. When you're running, you end up with stinging eyes because it just comes straight down. So, yeah.
And then when you have the sunscreen, the sunscreen sweat comes down. It is.
Yeah.
Baldness is challenging. Yeah. Don't let anyone tell you different.
we are slightly disappointed, Karen, because you did keep threatening to wear a bald cap next time you came on the podcast. But so maybe on your third appearance, we'll get you into a bald cap.
Well, I didn't want to appear too cheeky. So, yes, let's definitely make that the commitment for the third one. Should I be invited back for a third one, I shall have my bald cap at the ready. And that is a promise.
Okay. Right. We'll hold you to that.
Yeah. We accept.
Great to have you back, Karen. And we kind of put you back very specifically. We spent some time together earlier in the year at the NEC in the UK, sort of talking safety at a conference. Just at that time, you'd completed and started to launch out the data from a survey that you've been running. So I suppose the first thing we'd like to talk about today is just to sort of get a bit from you around what the survey was around, who it went out to, and then we can start to think about what it showed you.
Yeah, so thanks, Julian. Thanks, Langdon. I did this survey through my company LeaderLike about 3 months ago now. I think it was April time, and it was all about engagement in health and safety, what it is, what are the challenges, what's working, what isn't. And the objective in my mind was trying to understand from the people that are out there engaging others in health and safety what the perspective was, because my work and my work with LeaderLike is helping others engage people in health and safety. And I thought, let's put some of my assumptions to the test and see what other people are saying about it, those in the profession that are out there trying to do it. So it was really interesting because it was a small sample, just over 200 people. They were mainly health and safety professionals in the UK. But the data I got out of it was quite interesting, which gave me a bit of a foundation, I think, to do the survey again, to repeat it next year and see what kind of results we get. And what I guess what I'm not going to sort of dive into all the results, but it made me reflect a lot. The more I started to talk about the results and the more I started to read into them, it made me reflect, I guess, on where the focus is as a health and safety profession, how we see ourselves and where we need to be focusing, because I'm a strong believer that the way we behave follows what we believe and what we see ourselves as, I guess. So whatever we decide our focus is, the engagement is going to follow that. So really interesting results.
Like, I can see Langdon's thinking and probably going to ask a question, so I'm going to let Langdon go first.
Thanks, Jules. Something literally just popped in my head. Do you think, I mean, I know we'll ask some more questions, but do you think, is there any, I don't fully know that I recall the question set myself, and I think we talked about it, but do you think that was there anything to tell about a change of behavior, you know, meaning if as a EHS professional, if we come in, if we're working organization, we have our presuppositions, we have the values we're wanting to uphold. Is there anything that you were able to see that the organizational behaviors changing the personal behaviors for the EHS professional? Is there anything? And that's just, I know I'm throwing a massive curveball, so I apologize. That just came to me in your survey.
So the question is around organizational behavior changing individual behavior, which is quite a wide question. But I guess what this makes me think about is the two biggest challenges that came up were lack of time and lack of senior leadership support. So I guess if we're looking at organizational behavior, it's very much senior leaders that set the tone. So those two things are kind of mutually reinforcing. If we haven't got the commitment from senior leaders, that is not going to free us up for the time, or we're going to have senior leaders maybe, inadvertently getting in the way of the messages or not supporting them. And if we don't have that support, that we've then got to go out and, I guess, double up, duplicate our efforts, rectify things where the environment isn't laid out for us. So senior leaders, I would see definitely as key to creating that organizational behavior. And what I think I felt from the results in the survey is that health and safety professionals see engagement mainly about engaging the front line. They recognize that senior leaders need to be on board, but the focus seems to be on engaging the front line rather than going for the senior leaders first, who hold the keys really to the front line.
I think that's really interesting, Karen. I mean, we've talked about this a lot in the past. Is this whole what the leadership need to do? Just give us some examples of what are the things that leadership do that is counterproductive around safety.
Well, I guess the most obvious one is not following the rules, or inadvertently not following the rules, which can be rectified, because if somebody pulls them up on it and they use that as a storytelling opportunity, you know, that is a great chance to say, look, this is how good our safety culture is because somebody's pulled me up on this. But I guess you've got the basic following of the rules, you've got upholding the standards, verifying the standards, making decisions that take account of the impact on health and safety. And I guess going one step further, talking about it and talking about it as something that I guess is more integrated, because I think I put on a post on LinkedIn last week about communicating. And I guess the right thing to do, if we're saying at the top that we're putting health and safety first and it's the most important thing, then the right thing to do is to go the extra mile, make sure our communication has got through, and not just issuing our communication, because we can issue a message. Then if we don't know it's got through, we're ticking the box from our end and saying, yes, we've done this, we've done our part. But if we're not making sure it's got through, then really we're not doing the right thing. We've not gone the extra mile. So it's doing everything in your power as a senior leader to make sure your messages have got through.
And how do they do that on a sort of regular basis, Karen? Because I think that's the other thing that I'm really cognizant of is it's not just doing things once, it's having that sort of regular cadence of things, isn't it? So actually it keeps reinforcing this is important to us.
Let me give you an example. In organisations, there are often opportunities where senior leaders can come in and talk to the employees or another set of leaders as part of a town hall or a leadership meeting, and they might have an opportunity to do a safety moment. And there's a big difference between delivering a couple of PowerPoint slides that a health and safety professional has given you and taking what they've given you, making your own story about it, delivering that from the heart, and then saying, what do you think? And creating that space for engagement. So sometimes it can be just as simple as saying, I'm going to present for 5 minutes, and then I'm going to double that time to 10 minutes to let people talk about it. So it's that sort of 50-50 thing. And sometimes it feels like do we really have the luxury of time for that? But it's massive impact if you double the time allocated, 50% me talking, 50% the audience talking. And then you imagine if every senior leader did that, how powerful that would be.
And I think, well, to me, the perfect sort of thought process around that one is that actually communication is a two-way thing, isn't it?
Mm.
And actually it's being receptive to the feedback. And I think it shows a kind of strength and a vulnerability from senior leadership if they open themselves up to that. And it completely changes the perception of leadership behaviors. Because the danger with leadership is they come out and they just tell people this is the way it is. And people don't buy into stuff because they're told this is the way it is. Whereas actually, if they feel like they've had a voice and they've been heard and they've been allowed to discuss things, it changes their perception of their role in things, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I think the best way to look at it is when you communicate something, you have to have a little bit of something to communicate, but you could almost go up to 70% of letting it be about your audience, you know, just to have one key idea or topic and then say, what do you think? Because the audience will have all the answers. And that's the true definition of engagement. It's about them. It's not about you. But I can see where the challenge comes in here. And what I hear is there is a real fear amongst non-health and safety people of not having the answers, of not being the experts, because it is such a technical subject. So they would prefer to be given the technical information for fear of not having all the answers. And I think the further you go up in the organization, you feel it's about having all the answers. Whereas really, I think if we can let go of that and just say it's about having the right questions, it doesn't have to be perfectly correct. You know, as I talk to you now, I think the conversation that we're having is far better than having all the answers.
I think that's really powerful. Langdon, I'll let you talk in a moment. I was just gonna make one really sort of a point which I thought was really relevant is one of my passions in life is coaching, and Langdon knows that. We talk about coaching a lot. And the thing I say all the time is the coach doesn't have to have all the answers. The coach is there to make other people think about what the answers could be. And I think actually it, as a leader, again, it shows a sort of more mature honesty, doesn't it? If somebody can say, I haven't got the answers, but let's talk about what we're trying to achieve here.
Yeah, maybe I just add into that. So there was a question in my survey which said, when you talk about health and safety, how do you see yourself? And I gave a list of options. And the most popular option that people selected was trusted advisor. Coach wasn't so far behind, but you could see why people will see themselves as a trusted advisor, because often their role is to advise. They might even be called an HSC advisor. But then there's a real pressure to have all the answers, which really suppresses the engagement, in my view, which is why it led me to think it's good sometimes to have the answers up your sleeve, but it's more powerful to get other people to find the answers, because then they're going to do something with it. So maybe we need to slightly let go of the idea of being this trusted advisor, at least some of the time, so that we can create more engagement.
Yeah, good point. I totally agree with that. Is there, kind of shifting just for a second, but I want to come back to that. Is there any, what was the, I guess, majority of the industry that you saw taking this?
That's a really good question. And actually, you're not the first person to ask me this. So the next time I do this survey, I will be segmenting it by industry, but I didn't do that this time.
Okay.
I sort of made a choice not to. But yeah, that would be a really interesting finding.
And the reason curiosity, I think, was sparking in my mind just out of where we saw a lot of the maybe more growth or less growth, not just right, because maturity can be, I mean, that's across the board, no matter the organization, realistically. But I was just curious as to whether we saw more from manufacturing progression or healthcare or construction just from that, because you had a decent, I think, you know, 200 and something EHS professionals potentially spreading the gamut. That's a pretty good sample size to actually see the maturation of EHS professionals in the industry. So,
yeah, that's a really good question, which I don't have the answer to right now, but I'm going to commend you on your excellent question, Landon.
I was going to say, every once in a while, I'm going to...
Occasionally, yeah.
Very...
yeah. What I was going to say, though, it would be quite interesting, wouldn't it, to sort of compare maturity across sectors to see if there is a kind of correlation across those sectors and what sectors could learn from one another. Is this a silly question? But I suppose if you run it again, what ambitions have you got around the sample size that you're going to shoot for, Karen?
Well, I'd love to get to run it again, maybe at the end of the year, and ask the question around the industry and go for 1,000. I think it's always hard to get something off the ground for the first time, and then you publish the results and people see the value in it. So you almost have to prove the value first. But I'm confident that I could get a bigger sample size next time, and that would be really interesting. And I'd probably keep the questions roughly the same to see if we can compare from the first time. But yeah, always ambitious to get more people talking about what they think.
I'm just wondering if we could do something to get it out to the people who listen to the podcast, because obviously we've got quite a big following now. It'd be quite good to maybe get it out to our listeners. That could definitely help you, I think.
Yeah, so, hopefully we're hearing a few yeses and there's a few nods out there.
Yeah. And we only charge a small consulting fee, don't we, Langdon, for any kind of...
Oh. It's extremely.
I'm sure it's about the same as mine, so we'll be just fine.
Yeah.
I'm curious, right quick. Oh, sorry, Jules.
Go on, Lana.
I'm just curious, is if you were to, thinking of typical research paper, how you have everything set up, if you were to put a summary for yours, and I haven't seen it, if there is, what is the overarching summary that you have found thus far from the research you've collected?
Instinctively, I'm gonna go from the heart here. Engagement starts with senior leadership, and the focus needs to be there.
I think that's good.
Yeah,
and that's
it aligns to so much of the stuff we talk about, doesn't it? And yeah, I suppose the challenge always is what are the things that you do to engage senior leadership, isn't it? Is how do you get those people bought into doing safety?
Yeah, and here it brings in another topic that I haven't mentioned as well. I had a question around which group of stakeholders is the hardest to engage, and guess what? The survey said senior leaders.
Yeah.
So, which makes me wonder whether we're going for the easiest option, which is the front line, because there was also a question around who do I have my best conversations about health and safety with? People on the front line. So it feels easier to be out on the front line with the workers, engaging while they're doing the work. And I think maybe there is a fear that because these people sit at the top and they're a little bit scary, and there's a perception, rightly or wrongly, that they're hard to engage. Maybe we go for the easier option, especially when we don't have a lot of time. And I'm not saying it's a conscious thing. I feel it might be a blind spot.
I think it's an instinctive human reaction, isn't it, Karen? We instinctively shy away from the things that we're not confident about, and we'll lean into the things that we enjoy doing, the things that we get some results from. So I think that's one of the challenges. I suppose, what are your thoughts on one of the key things that we always talk about is understanding the why? So it's what's the why for senior leadership in terms of safety? That would be one of the first thoughts that I have in terms of, right, how do we start to engage these people?
Yeah, I guess it works in two directions. I think one, you just give yourself a whole less, hassle, I would say, less problems, because having to manage health and safety incidents costs time, resources, management time. You think about the hours that senior leaders must spend sort of reviewing incidents and sort of double checking on things. I think it puts you on the front foot. So if you get on the front foot and you act in a more preventive fashion, communicating really clearly, simply as one aligned leadership group, then that takes a bit of effort, but you're hopefully reducing the things going wrong. And also you're building your reputation as well, because when it's done really well, people start to notice your suppliers, your clients, they notice the way you're communicating. So for me, it's just a switch gears. It's like you're leading lagging indicators. Start doing the leading indicators for communication. You know, whereas we tend to communicate about the things that have gone wrong, get on the front foot, communicating about, you know, our ambitions for health and safety, what we want for health and safety, what does good look like, what good examples have we already got, and then you're getting on the front foot and hopefully not having to communicate quite as much about things going wrong and having to note things that have gone wrong.
And I think it's also challenging because it really is a little bit of a double-edged sword. So I see it as an EHS professional going out, and a lot of times it's easier to have the conversation with the front line because that's where true health and safety is. That's the ones who it's going to potentially adversely affect, or, you know, the good, the bad, it rides with them. So valid, there are then difficult times you have to overcome, especially if it's like a process change or whatever, somebody's done it. So I don't negate that, but a lot of times some of the quicker things, it's easier for me to go out and have those conversations when they're experiencing it. When if I try to take that to leadership and I paint the ROI picture or how it's good, if they've never experienced it, it's tough. And that's a different, you know, that is a, I'm not going to say it's a fear, but it is as a EHS, you have to think, I have to get creative to talk about how this is beneficial to the business. And my CFO is not very good. You know, ours is, I'm not saying that, but, you know, just hypothetically.
Yeah. And I'm not saying stop communicating with the front line. I'm just saying don't make it 100% of your focus. In reality, it's probably, you know, a 50-50. You're having to, you're a bit of an interpreter in a way. You're going out to the front line. You're looking at the struggles they've got. You're talking to them. You're hearing them out. You're fixing problems. And then you're having to change gears slightly, switch up your language, join the dots a bit more, and go and speak to the senior leadership team and build your credibility, saying, you know, I know this is what you're saying to me, but this is what I'm hearing on the front line. It's not what I'm saying, it's what I'm hearing. So we've got a gap here. And if we plug this gap, and if you can get rid of these barriers, then this is what I can do on the front line. So it's this constant being able to switch gears with your communication to go sort of up, down, sideways, and be that person in the middle that can bring everyone together.
And I think I think about my own experience, and I think that is something that honestly is heavily missed. So I got my master's, occupational health and safety, industrial hygiene. The influencing part, Jules, I knew you'd like that. Us as influencers, but in reality, it's a joke that we have, Karen. In reality, the the people side of it is what I will say, whether it's influence or anything, just discussion, the coaching, you know, all these adjectives. That part, I don't think is very, it's not very trained. It's not very taught. And it's easy for me to take all the, you know, going through, for example, the OSHA federal regulations and learning those and fall protection forfeit or, you know, whatever it is. It's easy. That's the easy stuff. But when you're thrown into an organization and then you have to make it real, that's something that is not, it's not taught, dealing with people. And as we continue to see changes, I think to me that everything you're hitting on is very valuable, because how do we continue building relationships, establishing camaraderie or whatever, and actually, you know, growing EHS and being that liaison? And I don't know that that's taught very well. I mean, it wasn't really, if I think about my program.
I think it's the thing that's missing. I mean, you look at the UK qualifications around safety, one of the biggest things that's missing in there to me is the whole influencing piece. Is, and it's not necessarily how do you influence downways, but it's like you said, Karen, it's sideways, it's mm-hmm. down, it's up, it's
fluid.
It's influencing across the organization. And you triggered me with something that you said a moment ago, Karen, which was actually what happens if safety goes wrong. And I think one of the key things that I like to talk about and try and get the business talking about is actually how does safety actually impact the business performance? And the other thing that triggered me was you talked about people liking to succeed. And actually, you think about senior leadership, they've probably got the biggest egos in the organization as well, haven't they? They're the top dogs. They're the people who've made it to the top. They're there for a reason. But actually, part of that reason is enjoying success. So part of the conversation is actually how can we start to show them that actually if you get this safety thing right, it's going to make you more successful. And it will be something you can shout about, and you can shout to your customers about it. You can shout to your investors about it. I had a really interesting conversation this morning. I went to a big manufacturing site this morning on a safety tour. And I said to the chap who was showing us around, I said, this, again, might sound like a crazy question, but this is a big organization, by the way. Why is safety really important to them? And I got lots of really fluffy answers, and I kept pushing. And where we got to was, actually, our investors are really focused in on investing in safe organizations because it affects their reputation. And also, we go for some local investment. It's really important that we actually show that we're a safe organization to get that local investment. So I talked earlier about the why with senior leadership. I think that's where you're trying to get to, isn't it? It's that actually, why is it important? Why is, and it will be completely different to why it's important to somebody on the front line.
Yeah, so they're looking at, for example, ESG and reporting requirements for ESG, which is far wider. So they know all about what they've got to comply with there, but they don't always realise exactly where health and safety fits with that and what's being done already in health and safety that can help show compliance there. For example, in the social part in the middle, the way you know, you manage your people, the way you communicate with your people is really important. So if you can show that you have an excellent engagement program for health and safety, that can be mentioned as being exemplary in your ESG report. So it's about, I think as a health and safety professional, it's really important to understand every aspect of ESG and where health and safety fits, because then you can go to the senior leadership team and talk knowledgeably, not just about your part of the picture, but the whole picture. And you might even, I guess, help them join the dots a bit better and make their life easier. And then they will love you for it.
I think that's another excellent point, because I think one of the dangers a lot of safety people fall into is they go to senior leadership and they talk about a really narrow band of things, and it's all very, very safety focused as opposed to being business focused. And that sort of broader, this is what safety brings across the organization, is a great conversation to have.
Yeah, for example, let's say you're doing a great engagement program with your supply chain. Let's say you've got an engagement program for health and safety. You've decided to include your subcontractors. You've got a whole program that's sort of kicked off. You can then mention that in the S part of your ESG on how you're managing your supply chain. So it can be a real lever, because I think to be excellent in health and safety, it's all about engagement and who you engage. And it doesn't stop at the most obvious people, which are your workforce. So if you're already doing it for health and safety, you know, you can either use that as an example for ESG, or you can take what you've got and apply it in other areas. So you're only doing it once, but you're leveraging it across other areas. And because we have such maturity in health and safety in so many industries in so many countries now, in a way, we're kind of ahead of the game. We're ahead of ESG in many areas. It's just that senior leaders might not realize that, and health and safety people might not realize that. But when you start to look into it, we've actually got the potential to lead the way on something that is a little bit new and confusing for some of our organizations.
I think that's quite right. A lot of people don't really understand the ESG piece, do they? And you did use the word I desperately tried to avoid using when I'm on a podcast with Langdon, which was lever, which Langdon, I'll point out, is a lever.
I love that. But we
said,
love that word.
Yeah.
And it is lever.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with lever. I'm familiar with lever, but
you've got me thinking now. Leverage.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Don't encourage him, please, Karen. Do not encourage
him. Thank you, Karen. Karen, maybe we could replace Jules. I mean, we're already on the same page here.
And I'm happy, you know, in the spirit of engagement, I'm happy to call it a lever if you would prefer. Yeah. Maybe we might annoy Julian a bit. So we really can't win with this engagement business. You have to be all things to all people.
All people.
Really do.
Can I take you right back, Karen? Because you said something quite early on, which I thought was interesting, which was you were talking around the focus of the safety person being important. Just talk a bit through what you meant about that and give us some examples.
Yeah. So I think it's the focus starts with your identity and how you see yourself. Really, I think the traditional view of health and safety, and I've heard people say it, is we are a trusted advisor or we are an advisor. But really, you have to embrace a whole series of roles, you know, from sometimes when the situation arises, you have to go in and fix the problems. Sometimes you have to manage a crisis. You have to give people the answers. There are other times when you've got a bit more time, when there's not so many dangers, where you can sit back a bit and do some pure coaching and even be inspirational, be a change agent. When you've got that space and nobody's in danger, you can do that. And then there's times when you might actually need to switch up and just do pure listening, analyzing, strategizing, literally doing nothing, which is hard sometimes to just sit back and do nothing, but just take in the information, do the analysis. And probably because of a lack of time and stress, we can sometimes be blinkered and just stay in one of those roles. But I think recognizing there is an opportunity to take our focus kind of out and in and switch between roles in any one day is probably our biggest superpower.
Great point.
And challenge.
Yeah.
Got this.
Yeah. Yep.
We're influencers.
We are. I think we need a cape if we're going to have superpowers, don't we?
Well, you are anyway.
You are as well, Karen. You're definitely up there with the influencers. Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm curious, we've kind of hit on the summary where we move. Where do you see, and I don't know if we might have talked about this last time, and in curiosity to the age of the sample size and kind of what we think about the industry, where do you see health and safety moving forward with the age change, with the workforce change, with the way people interact change? What are some things that you're seeing? And is that something I'm going to give a back end to this as well. And is that something that you seeing as being a massive change, whether it's focusing for a survey for anything in the future? Because it's, I'm young. I mean, relatively. I mean, birthday Sunday, so I'm still relatively young, right? So I'll be 39. But in the last 14 to 15 years, I've seen a change in how working with people. Do you see that playing a fast problem, or what do you see? What are your thoughts?
I guess I would see, I think we've got a real opportunity to reposition health and safety in people's minds and get more younger people in, because health and safety tends to be the butt of all jokes. So I'll give you a funny little example. I was coming back from France yesterday on a ferry, and there was a kids entertainer on there doing a magic show, and they were pretending to tip this glass of water over this little boy's head. And they said, let's get the health and safety hat on now. And it was this little sort of bath cap, which was absolutely hilarious. So, you know, there's never an opportunity lost to sort of talk about health and safety. And yet, if we move away from talking about health and safety and talk about risk, I guess it becomes a wider business function, and it gives us the opportunity to think about the bigger picture, because sometimes we can address one risk and then introduce another. I'm thinking about this really interesting bit of research I saw the other day about riding bikes in Scotland. So if you go out, if you cycle to work, you reduce your mental health risk by half, but you double your risk of being knocked over, being in a road traffic collision, if I remember rightly. And that just really struck me. And the way it's presented, what is somebody supposed to do? Do you get on your bike and cycle to work, or don't you? But we shouldn't really be in that dilemma. But if we elevate ourselves and look at how we manage risks, then we're not having to weigh off mental health, physical safety, well-being, occupational health. I think we need to have health and safety professionals working on the risk agenda instead. We're a risk function, and then you have the specialists, and we're talking at the higher level. So we don't get these dilemmas, really, for people deciding to make a choice that brings about a risk. Because when we can understand the bigger picture, we can then set ourselves up for success in all areas. And I think talking about risk is more attractive, and it's more of a business issue. It's more how we manage risk is an ethical issue. So that's what occurs to me right now. I don't have all the answers, but, you know, I can already see a shift, and that is the way I feel we're going.
I really like that, actually. I think, and again, it kind of aligns to the way it should be, isn't it? Which is so often when you talk to people about health and safety, it's seen as this management of incidents, isn't it? Rather than actually a management of trying to stop things from happening. And again, all good businesses manage the risks across their organization, not just safety risks. So as you say, it kind of starts to tie into working more closely with the broader business rather than being this little separate enclave, I'll call it, of people who are just focusing on health and safety, and not sort of seen as integral to what happens on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think we need to break out of the silos, and probably one way to do that is change the way we're perceived, change the way we see ourselves, change the perception in the organization and outside. Because the trouble we have with this idea of health and safety is the better we get at it, the more regulations come in, the more procedures come in, the more people are turned off by this feeling that they're being stopped from doing the work. So I think talking about risk in general allows us to have this conversation about, well, if we're going to take a risk, you know, if we're going to put controls in here, what does that mean for this other area? Because potentially we're setting ourselves up to fail, I guess, you know, and that example of the cycling to work is a really good one.
It's a really interesting one. Yeah. So, and I've cycled in Scotland as well. So
I was going to say, Jules, you need to.
Yeah. I'm just about to cycle.
Adhere to
that. Yeah. The next big one's coming up as well, London to Paris. So I don't want to see the stats for Paris before I go. I'll just go in blindly. So
it really makes you think, doesn't it?
It does make you think. It's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I think if we want to shape the bigger picture, we have to have the big picture to our hands, because it's no good going in blindly and saying, look, everybody needs to cycle to work now. It's great for your mental health. And then you're sending people off into another risk. So, you know, we really need to understand and work with people outside of our function.
I think it aligns perfectly to what we were talking about earlier, which is understanding the broader business objectives and how what we do can impact those broader business objectives, rather than just looking at it through that one lens of health and safety. I think that's a really good summary. Yeah.
Yeah, I just had a bit of a thought, actually, which is what I love about these conversations, because something sort of cropped up in my mind that I hadn't thought of. But what if we were to be health and safety strategists instead of advisors?
Ooh. I like that.
You know,
that. Yeah.
That's a really funky, cool name. And we're strategizing, we're moving between different departments and functions, having the conversations, deciding on the strategy and how it fits with.
Yeah.
You know, the bigger picture of ESG, how it fits with the other risks, how it fits with the business.
Yeah, and I suppose the other sort of parts of the organization. So you think about HR, there's a natural strategy there, isn't there, where safety supports effective HR. Same thing with operations. It goes across the board. So I think you're onto something there, Karen. I can feel another book coming on.
Yeah. Well, even if you, yeah, there is supposed to be another book coming along.
Yeah.
Waiting for some downtime. But but the more you think about it and talk about it, this is why engagement is so important, because if I purely speak from my own lane, I don't get these insights, but it's this back and forth and the questions that suddenly makes you think a bit differently. And what if we would have a health and safety strategist within each health and safety team, so that one person's that's able to switch between the big picture and the detail, which is what you need to do, so they can communicate with the other functions, bring the information back in, take the information back out from health and safety and say, look, we need to adjust here because this is happening over there. So either we all see ourselves as strategists, or, you know, the technical people do their specialisms and we have a strategist on board. You know, I did think it was a communicator or an engagement specialist, but the strategist could be the person that, you know, liaises with internal comms and HR.
And to me, that's it. I mean, I really like that, because it is, you are, yes, you're trying to get engagement, but at the flip side, there's a lot of, you're the person that others are viewing to make sure that you've checked all the boxes from compliance, from your internal regulations that you might adhere to, and then make sure everyone's on board. And then what are things we can do different? How does, you know, to what Joel said a minute ago, how does this go to the operations? How does it go to HR or medical? So it really is a go-between, so to speak. But
that's the word.
But you have to. I mean, it's, otherwise you're siloed and then you're going to miss something. And that's tough. You know, one of the easiest examples to think about is like the return to work. It's easy for, you know, Jules get injured, come back to me. I'm good to go as the safety guy. All right, do your job. But then I haven't been told, well, actually he has a back injury, so I didn't even get the medical side of it. So then you know, what you were speaking to a moment ago, Karen, made me think about, do we focus on we get so caught up a lot of times focusing on the hazards, or even sometimes just the overarching risk, that what does everything actually entail to then think about how that's associated with the hazards or the risks or the job itself. So it's a very convoluted profession many times that doesn't get the assistance needed really to be maximized throughout.
I think, well, the other thing I was going to say was it aligns what you're talking about there to me, Karen, aligns perfectly to things like the ISO standards, where actually we're looking to drive continuous improvement. You think about any ISO standard, that's one of the overarching things, isn't it? Is how do we drive continuous improvement? And the only way you're going to do that is by understanding what's going on and creating a strategy based upon that understanding to change things and to drive things moving forward. So I think you are onto something here around making it a strategist. And communication is then part of being a good strategist, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And it overcomes that challenge of not having the time, because I don't think it's that the health and safety function doesn't recognise that they need to do it, but they're caught between a rock and a hard place. And if you've got somebody dedicated to that, it basically takes that whole weight off your shoulder, having someone else feeding the strategy and taking it out and working on the strategy. It's one of the things that I'm most called on to do on a sort of one-off basis, is to work with the health and safety team to help them on strategy.
And again, I think if you move in that direction, it comes back to that other point you made earlier, which is it changes the perception of what safety people are about, because it changes them from being the fun police walking around with a clipboard and trying to just stop people from doing stuff to actually being supportive in terms of, right, how do we succeed as a team, as a department, as an organisation?
Yeah, it's quite exciting. And if we want to encourage more people into the profession, a health and safety or a risk strategist,
yep,
it's quite a nice ring to it, I believe.
There we go.
A risk strategist.
Yeah.
I'm off to change my job title on LinkedIn. Hang on.
Yeah. Good.
Be right back.
Yeah. So I'm conscious of time, Karen, and I'm conscious you need to go to LinkedIn and start changing your profile and your job
trademark
title. Yeah.
And you too as well. We'll set a trend.
Yeah. I think that's been a great conversation. I think there is going to be a third Karen Hewitt podcast with you wearing a bald cap. I think that's got to be done.
Brilliant.
Thank you for giving up your time again to speak to these two bald idiots. It's been a great conversation as always. Langdon, I'll let you sign us off in your inimitable style.
Oh, thanks, Julio. Karen, we do appreciate your time and the conversation. I love research. I love the samples of getting various aspects. And I think that's something we definitely should follow up and look at, because that's how you get so much of the real information of what's actually happening. So it's been a pleasure having you here again. But to all the listeners out there, we appreciate you joining in. Hopefully you have learned just a little bit from Karen, probably not from us, but we hope that you're able to take that and help your own organization. So as you go about your business, everyone, remember to stay healthy, stay safe, and watch each other's back out there. Hey everyone, really appreciate you tuning into this episode of Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. Please follow and subscribe to wherever you stream your favorite podcast, or visit us at evotix.com.
And if you want to see how follically challenged we really are, come and check us out on YouTube. If you've got value from the podcast, please go to Apple Podcasts, and in the review section of this podcast, if you could leave us a review or a rating, that would be great.
And as always, everyone, while you're going about your days and about your normal lives, stay safe out there and watch each other's back.